Alibaba announced Tuesday it will allow American small and mid-sized businesses to start selling their wares on the Chinese company's massive global e-commerce platform, which will allow U.S. businesses to connect with corporate customers around the world. Until now, American companies were only able to buy but not sell on Alibaba. Alibaba is looking to get a bigger piece of the $23.9 trillion global marketplace for business-to-business transactions at a time when tensions between Beijing and Washington are making it hard for Chinese companies to do business.
For years, it's been an open secret that Boris, as he's known, wants to be prime minister. Donald Trump backed Boris Johnson to be the UK's next prime minister at the start of his leadership campaign, saying he'd do a very good job. As we wait to find out if that's true, many see parallels between the two men that go beyond the blonde.
It's the most common type of cancer in women. According to the World Health Organization, there are 2.1 million new cases of breast cancer across the globe each year. And now scientists using AI tech have analyzed millions of cells from breast cancer tissue to create what they describe as an atlas of tumors.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's July 24th. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. And there's lots going on today. It's going to be a busy day. We've got the Mueller testimony on Capitol Hill. Lots of news from the auto industry, specifically about Nissan. We'll hit those in some of the headlines. New prime minister taking over in Great Britain. You heard in the opening montage there, Boris Johnson taking over today as prime minister. Lots going on. We're going to have a good show for you today as well. With the cancer discussion, the business of health and medicine leading off our conversation today, we'll speak with one of the lead researchers at Northwestern University who has helped develop a Trojan horse of sorts to deliver anti-cancer drugs. We'll talk to the lead researcher again coming up in our first segment just momentarily here this morning. A little bit later in the program, our Building Business Around Town segment. We'll pay a visit to Bridge Development Partners. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's get going with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. It could be a negative start to the day on Wall Street today, with futures now pointing into the red by nearly 72 points on the Dow, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P 500 futures off nearly a third. At NASDAQ futures off more than a half a percent, down 50 points this morning. The opening bell rings today after stocks closed higher yesterday on reports of new trade talks between the U.S. and China. Shares of Caterpillar and John Deere each rose more than a percent on the news. Strong earnings from Coca-Cola and United Technologies also helped boost markets yesterday. In Europe this morning, markets in London are lower by nearly 67 points. That's almost a full percent this morning. In Germany, higher by nearly a quarter of a percent. In France, off by more than a half a percent. In Asia, the Nikkei is going to end the day in positive territory. In Tokyo, up nearly 88 points, nearly a half a percent higher. In Hong Kong, nearly a quarter of a percent higher. And in China, by nearly three quarters of a percent. And oil this morning is trading in the U.S. at $57, even a barrel, up nearly 23 cents. We begin this morning with some news about Nissan from the auto industry. Nissan says it's planning to cut more than 10,000 jobs worldwide, according to Japanese media. That's in addition to nearly 5,000 cuts the Japanese automaker announced back in May. The new round of cuts will include early retirements. Nissan employs nearly 140,000 people worldwide, more than 36,000 in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. The company has plants in Mississippi and Tennessee. The Japanese news report says Nissan will announce the job cuts tomorrow. Nissan also confirming reports that its first quarter operating profit plunged by nearly 90%. That report, when it came out earlier this morning, was thought to be erroneous, but Nissan now confirming that that is, in their words, broadly accurate. Also this morning, the trade talks, we told you in the opening segment there that there is some hope that there will be trade talks between the U.S. and China. It'll be the first talks since the June G20 summit meeting. And today, the Senate is considering the legal issue of marijuana sales and banking. Senators discuss regulating banks' ability to provide service to businesses that sell marijuana in states where it's been legalized, like Illinois. Since the drug is currently illegal at the federal level, banks are not allowed to provide those services. Senators Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Cory Gardner of Colorado aim to bring a version of the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act to the floor to address the issue. A version of that has already passed in the House. We begin this morning with the business of health and medicine. It could be a game changer in the fight against cancer. Northwestern scientists have successfully used fat as a Trojan horse to deliver anti-cancer drugs. The lead researcher is with us this morning, Nathan Gianeschi of Jacob and Rosalind Cohn Professor of Chemistry at Northwestern University, on the line with us this morning. Nathan, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I don't want to jump put myself in front of the skis here, but is that fair to say that this could be a game changer in the fight against cancer?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's always important to remember that it'd be one component of a big effort. But yes, this is one way of potentially making what is essentially a toxic drug less toxic, and therefore being able to use much more of it to more quickly kill cancer.
Well, talk to us a little about how this is done. We mentioned this is a Trojan horse. How do you get these cancer drugs in, and what are you using?
So the Trojan horse analogy is really apt, and essentially what you're doing is tricking the not just the cells, the cancer cells, but the body more generally. This is important to note that this was done in mouse models of cancer. And so you're tricking the body into thinking that this is a metabolite, a nutrient that can be used by the cells and transported around the body. And so what we did was take a molecule that was a newly discovered molecule, connect it to the drug, and then hide the drug in that way so that the cells and tissues and your transport systems for carrying these nutrients are convinced that it's sort of a natural, normal thing. When the tumor cells see this, they take it inside. It's like taking inside the cargo. That's hence the Trojan horse analogy. They take it inside, and then they metabolize it, and then the drug comes out. And the drug is a known cancer drug, so it's already approved and in several formulations in the clinic. That drug is now inside the cell and can kill that cell locally and other cells associated with it. So that's essentially the idea. The novelty really came from the molecule itself that we use to mimic more closely than people had before the way that fats actually function. And that's because we preserve its ability to bind to these fat transport proteins in your body.
Yeah, so it's really sort of like a 1-2 punch. You get the drugs in through the fat, and then there's the drug itself that you're able to use in higher doses too, right?
That's right. Yeah, because you make the drug safer. You can imagine if you were taking a pill and it had a limit per day, you know, 2 or 3 pills per day. But if you made that drug much, much safer and much, much more targeted, so that it would only go to certain tissues, for example, and not damage your liver as much, then you could take much more of that drug. And so this has been sort of a classic idea behind making drugs more targeted, is to hopefully make them safer so that you can dose more of them. Yeah, so by getting them on target, you go to these higher levels in the blood. And that's been the general idea within this sort of field.
Yeah, I think anybody who's gone through cancer or has family or friends that have done it, the chemotherapy part of it is just as bad, almost as the cancer can be. And so this gets in there. I know you mentioned this is only in mice. What is going to be the next step here, obviously, to test on humans, I'm guessing?
Yeah, so this was a, you know, began as an effort between, you know, my lab and a colleague of mine and Paul Burton, who, you know, he and I essentially realized that the initial step was to do it as we've done here over many years within an academic setting. And then the next step is to, as you said, try to get it tested in humans. This now involves transitioning the technology to a company. So we spent out a company to do this, This has been about a 4 or 5 year effort, and so the company started last year, and the goal is to get investment and take it to the clinics. It's the type of thing that only a private company can do, really, rather than it being done in a academic setting.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that a little bit later. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about the kinds of cancers we're talking about that this is going to work well on. Three of the big ones, right? Three of the big, most deadliest cancers.
Yeah, so in the paper, and sort of in a typical study, it's good to pick several types of tumors. These are, in this case, human tumors that we picked that are then grown in mice. They have some problems associated with those models. They're not exact, obviously. They're in mice. They're not in humans. But that's sort of the typical thing. And so one of them was pancreatic cancer. One of them, for example, was a bone cancer. And so we picked these things for various specific reasons. One of the common features of the cells that we used is that they're the kinds of cells that love to eat these fats. They have these high rates of metabolizing those types of nutrients. And so we don't believe that it's going to be entirely general. Nothing ever is, and it would take a lot of testing to prove that. But yeah, it could be something that could replace the way this particular drug is currently delivered for a whole range of tumors. And one of them, as you mentioned, was one of them is breast cancer. That's where this drug is used fairly often in the clinic. And so that type of cancer could be a target for this.
Yeah, I know the paper also talked about bone and colon cancer, two of the other big ones.
Right.
And we don't want to get people's hopes up here, but the paper talked about that in these tests, the tumors were completely eliminated.
Yeah, in some cases. Yeah, in some of the mice. And so you've always got a little bit of diversity in the outcome. But yes, in some cases, the growth is completely arrested. In some cases, we can dose enough drug that the tumors disappear over time. The way the regimen is done in the animals is you dose and dose and dose for several weeks and then stop dosing, and we watch how the tumor recovers, if you like. And so, and it's important to note as well, in a human, you would be doing this and you would be doing other things. And so patients are often, as we know, given a range of different treatments to keep, and they can come back again and they couple it with surgery. And so the actual treatment regimen in humans is more elaborate. We sort of allow we do this as a monotherapy, so we just do a single drug. But yeah, in some cases, it works very, very well, and much better than the clinical drugs because they're toxic enough that you can't keep dosing to eliminate the tumors. Those drugs do work, of course. That's why they're in the clinic. But the idea here is to obviously beat them and make it better and, as you said, less toxic to patients.
The lead researcher on this, the lead scientist Nathan Gianeschi, on with us today from Northwestern University. Nathan, earlier you talked about how this is being tested now in mice. I'm wondering what you might expect the human body will do when it reacts to this therapy. Is cancer one of the could cancer eventually get smart to this Trojan horse?
Yeah, so this is literally the multi-million dollar question. And so as you say, tumors become resistant to drugs. That's true for all kinds of therapeutics, that just like bacteria, right? The cells are able to evolve away from what is killing them. One of the ways it does that is because the cells see the drug over time. The cells that survive it then go on to flourish, and this is always a problem. And this is where sort of the combination comes in. In fact, this class of drug, the taxane that we use here, the so-called taxane, has recently been used in combination with immunotherapy, for example. And this is potentially a strategy where you awaken the immune system against the tumor in addition to killing it with these types of what we call cytotoxins, or literally cell toxins. And so that kind of combination is something that we envision would be a pathway for this, for example, in the clinic.
The business part of this is fascinating as well. Tell us more about that, how that process works. As one of the scientists that's working on this, do you become part of the company? Do you go out and try to get investments for this, or is it completely separate from what you do?
Yeah, so this is sort of a necessary step, we think. So What the first step was, so we did, obviously, this paper represents one part of how we've communicated this to the outside world. The other part is through multiple patent filings. So we have two patents now on this specific molecule that we reported in this paper, as well as a family of intellectual property around the general approach. And so part of that, of course, is to make sure that when we start a company and then license to it, or if we license to another third party, that any investment made in that in order to bring it to the market is then protected. And so that's a necessary initial step, right? There's the science, and then, of course, we need to protect it by filing the correct and good patents. And so we have built that up over the years, and this has involved myself, I mentioned my collaborator, Paul Burton, and several of the other authors. So this is, you know, as I said, a big academic effort, but also these folks, graduate students, postdoctoral fellows in my group, are also on those patents. And so Cassandra Coleman, for example, Cassie Coleman, who's the first author, was involved in that as well. And so over the years, 4 or 5 years of work, there'd been that development of that intellectual property position. We formed a company that then licensed that IP for oncology, for cancer, and yes, is then takes that, what you could view as the asset or the assets, and then is going out into the world trying to get investors interested. And of course, the investment funds the company to do all kinds of work, which includes further animal studies as they develop a package for going to a phase one trial in humans. And so, when I say we, myself and a partner, actually a company in Chicago, Elevance Renewable Sciences, started that company. They were a partner in this to begin with and funded the research when we started.
No, I was just going to say this all sounds like very exciting stuff. It sounds like plenty is to do yet, but it feels like this is good news in the fight against cancer, and we appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Nathan Janeschke, the Jacob and Rosalind Cohn Professor of Chemistry at Northwestern University. We're going to link out to the story on this research and what could be a game changer in the fight against cancer.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. It's time again to check in on our monthly Building Business Around Town conversation, sponsored by Associated Bank. And this month, WGN's Bennett Wakenight visited Downers Grove to sit down with Steve Grotzema, of CEO of Bridge Development Partners, to discuss how e-commerce is one of the driving factors of the commercial real estate market here in the Chicago area.
I'm Bennett Wakenight with WGN Radio, and this is Building Business Around Town, brought to you by Associated Bank. And we're here in Downers Grove, and this is Steve Grotzema, the COO of Bridge Development Partners. Steve, thanks so much for having us out here today.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So a lot of people may have driven by one of these large developments, seen outside these boxes on the highway, but not a lot of people get to see inside. So give us an idea as to what role these types of buildings play.
Sure. What's great about these buildings is that they can play any number of roles for any number of users. We were talking on the way over here that these buildings, we've done large distributors out of these facilities. We've done manufacturers. We've done light assembly. We've done alternative uses where they've been quasi-retail or will call operations. We've done amusement uses where they've had everything from go-karts to volleyball facilities. We did a badminton facility down the road. That's uncommon. Typically, the most active use is some type of light assembly or distribution, but these buildings are built and designed to be flexible and accommodating for any size or any number of users.
Right, and that's kind of where Bridge Development Partners comes in. That's your guys' expertise. So that's where you guys fall within the larger commercial real estate grade industry. Is that right?
Absolutely. In our industry, I think what we're probably known for is we typically develop into more locations where there's a lot more barriers to entry, whether that's an environmentally contaminated site in extreme cases, or we're redeveloping an obsolete facility. What we don't typically do is go and buy farmland and build a larger building where there's green fields adjacent to it where you could replicate it. What we try to do is build irreplaceable real estate, quite simply where there's more demand than supply from a user perspective and an institutional investor perspective. And once the buildings are up, once they get to this state, there's any number of users that can move in here, like we said, and they don't have, in these locations, a lot of options to relocate their business to a state-of-the-art facility.
So when it comes to the larger business scene of how people get their everyday goods, how businesses get to their jobs, these buildings play a really vital role into the success of all of these things getting to where they need to be, right?
Absolutely. This is no coincidence that we're surrounded by houses here. I mean, in our industry, what's happening is, whether it's from an employer's perspective, a group that's going to decide to locate their company here, or a distributor who's distributing from this location, it's all about getting close to the rooftops. And that was a little bit different from 10, 15 years ago, where previously in our industry, there was a little bit of a prioritization to acquire a 1 million square foot box in a greenfield location where you could distribute regionally by that across the Midwest. And what we learned, and I think what the industry learned, was that was pretty specialized. There was only a handful of groups that could acquire across that amount of, distribute across that amount of geography. From these locations, it's really any number of guys that can go here. It's guys that are distributing to this immediate location. It's guys that are distributing across Chicagoland. There's a lot of guys that want to come to these buildings for their employees. Their employees are surrounding here, both executive housing and blue collar labor here. So more often than not, it's a matter, it's driven by that employee count.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what goes into the process of starting from beginning to the end.
Our site selection starts really without a user in mind. There are some of our competitors and some of the other groups that have a stable of clients where they frequently build their buildings and they've got a build-to-suit in tow, and that's not how we operate. Typically, about 95% of what we do is speculative development, and that's breaking ground on expensive buildings without an end user known. We think we've got an idea who might go there, but it's what we look at is sort of look across Chicagoland and in our other markets and say, what locations do we want to be? And we have a pretty narrow site selection, and we reach out to the brokerage network to bring us sites within this pretty defined location. And our sites are typically not obvious. It may seem obvious once you're sitting here at the intersection of these interstates, but a lot of times it requires a pretty significant zoning change, a pretty prolonged process with the municipality. We're demoing buildings. We're remediating environmentally contaminated land. It takes a little bit of a creative process and a lot of perseverance.
You guys clearly know what you're doing at Bridge Development Partners. You guys won Developer of the Year last year, and the location, Bridgepoint 290, is an award-winning site as well. So give us an idea as to the significance of that site and what that means going forward for the business.
We hang our hat on that deal. We're very proud of that deal, but in certain ways, that's kind of the prototypical Bridge deal. This was phase one was about an 19-acre site. The building ended up being about 300,000 square feet, but the site was originally a factory for GE. They built GE hot point appliances there going back decades. And they had shut down that facility in the 90s, and for 15 years, the site sat vacant. It was, quite frankly, kind of an eyesore on a pretty prominent thoroughfare in the town of Cicero. And it had been overlooked by guys, because you look around there and it's somewhat down and dirty. It's old school manufacturing. But we went in there and were able to figure out some of the development challenges. In that case, it was some environmental remediation, some interesting soils. What some people don't know about areas like Cicero is a lot of the debris from the Chicago fire was buried there. So you get into the soils and you got a lot of organic material that deteriorates. So a lot of times in those locations, you're solving for the soil. We were able to do that and started building that building. And not long after we broke ground, a Cicero company, one of the largest employers in Cicero, moved their operation into that. And it was a wonderful case study for us, where it was a difficult site that we were able to solve some challenges on the front end. The demand from the user proved itself out relatively quickly. And what we like to say is the municipalities tend to be the biggest beneficiary of these. We're returning blighted, outdated sites into, you know, large employment bases there, and their tax rates are increasing and generates significant tax revenue and jobs for the municipality.
What has been the role of Associated Bank in throughout the process of maybe one of these buildings or throughout the longevity of Bridge Development Partners?
Yeah, Associated has been one of our most active lenders since 2011. And when you guys may not recall, but 2008, 2009, 2010 weren't very fun times for for industrial developers there. In 2011, when the market started coming back, Associated was the first one to, you know, sidle up alongside us and support us with what we were doing. And it's easy to see these buildings once they're up and say, okay, that's, you know, that's an obvious industrial site, or that's an area where there's going to be a lot of demand. But on the front end, these aren't easy deals. And quite frankly, we're sending them loan requests that are the most expensive buildings in the market without a tenant lined up in demand. And a lot of times before we could even start construction, we're remediating some environmental condition or demoing a building, not knowing exactly what's on the inside of it. So there's a great amount of trust that needs to go in from our lenders. And Associated has always been the best in the business for trusting us and being right there supporting us.
Right. And it seems like being on that same page is one of the vital factors as far as, you know, having a project from beginning to end run smoothly and, you know, have a happy client at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, and projects never run smoothly, you know, as our guys will tell us. And we'll send them our pro forma and we'll say, listen, the one thing that we can tell you that's not going to happen is what we've modeled here. And a lot of times, thankfully, in recent years, that news has been better. But sometimes that news is worse when you're developing on spec. And Associated continues to understand that with us, that you may be halfway through construction and need to change paths for better or for worse. Sometimes it's a good thing that steps up and makes you change your construction scope. And not all lenders can be flexible and dynamic, reacting to some needs of the client, whereas those are probably the two words I'd use to describe Associated when the rubber meets the road. They're flexible and dynamic for us.
What are you guys looking forward to as time moves on and throughout the rest of the year?
Well, obviously in our industry, e-commerce is what everybody's talking about right now. And where does that stop? How much room do we have to run? And I Bridge as a company still thinks that there's some room to run in the e-commerce game. What we're trying to do is keep our focus pretty tight. In Chicago, the areas that we play in, we don't plan on expanding that very much. We like the submarkets that we're in. I think the same thing can be said about the other markets that we're in. We're looking to expand into other cities. Our business plan there is kind of the uber core gateway markets, whether that's Toronto or London or Paris in Europe, because we think our business plan we can replicate in these other markets. It's about finding the best of the best personnel in that market and being adjacent to large population base when you're building these buildings.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for having us out here today, giving us a little behind-the-scenes take as to what goes into the commercial real estate industry here in the Midwest. And we're excited to see what comes out of Bridge Development Partners next.
Of course. Thank you again.
Building Business Around Town with Bennett Wakenight, sponsored by Associated Bank.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, down 50 points on the Dow, down nearly 40 points on the NASDAQ, nearly a quarter of a percent on the S&P 500. Now, agriculture and commodities, and here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A mixed day in grain trade at the Board of Trade yesterday as December wheat dropped just 0.75 cents a bushel, and November soybeans were down 2.5 cents, while December corn ended up 4.5 cents a bushel. Again, weather concerns involved in the trade yesterday. And one of the first crop tours of the season underway. The annual Wheat Quality Council starting its annual tour in North Dakota. They concluded after the first day of the crop tour that ample rain and a lack of damaging heat is boosting yields potential for spring wheat in east central North Dakota. After four stops, the yield potential averaged 71 bushels per acre with a low of 59 bushels per acre. That compares with 31.9 bushels on the same route last year. Livestock trade, well, China is still in that picture as hog traders are hoping that China will be importing U.S. pork. As a result, the October lean hog contract was up $2.45 yesterday. The October cattle contract up 82 cents, and the October feeder cattle contract end of the day 12 cents higher. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, July 24th. New home sales for June out today. Housing industry analysts are forecasting sales last month, recovering some of the ground lost in May. Experts see sales for June coming in at an annual rate of about 650,000, a 3.8% improvement over May when sales fell more than 7.5%. Also today, German manufacturing data will get U.S. crude inventories and a very busy day for earnings, including Chicago-based Boeing, Illinois-based Caterpillar, Deutsche Bank, AT&T, UPS, Facebook, Ford, PayPal, Chicago-based W.W. Grainger, and Tesla, all reporting quarterly earnings either before or after the opening bell today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Wednesday, July the 24th.